Hello, Capricorn. Welcome to Reckoning, your 2025 spring reading from Planet Waves. I'm Eric Francis, your astrologer here, with a reading of your charts and also some responses and contemplation of what is going on in the world and the relationship of the astrology to the events of the world and where you fit into this very complicated scenario. It must be said that we're living in such challenging times, and there are many people who are struggling to get through the day. I hope that you're not one of them. If you are one of them, please, you know, get some support that you need. If you are not one of them, please do what you can to help people who are struggling, and remember, they may not be showing it. It might be the quiet person at work. It might be a neighbor that you never hear from. It might be someone that you're passing on the street. It might be someone that you are encountering in a normal, you know, retail transaction. Remember that you do not know what people are going through, and they don't know what you are going through. And I think that in this time where, the president's sidekick poses with a chainsaw, kind of one step removed from beyond a sledgehammer, poses with a chainsaw. I don't know if you saw that photo of Elon Musk holding a, yep, we're going to cut everything down. We're going to, et cetera, et cetera. We remaining humans, disciples of humanity and participants in the human experiment, would be well served by a spirit of gentleness and honoring the unknown, and just remembering we don't know where people are really at until we find out, and they're not necessarily going to be so quick to say where they are at. So you have just lived through a transit that went on for about 16-ish years, I guess, 2008 through end-to-end 2008 through 2024. That's a long transit. That was Pluto going through Capricorn. And in this Pluto going through Capricorn era, what we saw was quite a bit of sledgehammering of the world and the dismantling of institutions and the abandonment of traditions and customs that, you know, that we humans need. We need a little bit of that ritual spirit. We rely on some of that ritual spirit to kind of remind us, you know, who we are, and to remind us to find a moment where we reconnect with a sense of purpose and make a conscious choice to seek understanding, and all of those rituals and customs, and to the extent that they could be trusted, and some of them were trustworthy, institutions are being taken apart. And a lot of this happened during Pluto in Capricorn. It was almost like it was to destroy something that had been built was a temptation that was too big for destructive entities and people to resist, and they just kept going at it. And now the world is living in the aftermath of that, and you are living in the aftermath of an outer planet transit. And my experience has revealed that when an outer planet transit ends, there is a permanent change made in you, in the psyche, in the place of consciousness that represented by that transit. And of course, Capricorn has a lot to do with you. It's a primary significator for you, and you know, look at what we experienced, particularly in the last few years of Pluto in Capricorn, and how power obsessed everyone, nearly not everyone is power obsessed, but I will say that many people are power obsessed, and that the temptation is being like dangled in front of everyone all the time, and sometimes it seems like too much a temptation to resist. Ooh, I have a little power. Ooh, what am I going to do with it? It was this crazy thing that we experienced, and now it seems to be multiplied by Pluto and Aquarius, and coming home to roost in this thing that is ever important to humanity, which is our ability to socialize, the social environment. And this is going on somewhat before Pluto and Aquarius, but the social environment has been turned into a kind of a power game. And one of the things that Pluto and Aquarius tells me about you is that you have the opportunity to connect with your deeper values. That's what the second house is. That's what Aquarius is for you. It is your idealistic streak. I think that the books have Capricorn all wrong. There may be some surface crusty level dimensions of Aquarius that have you being sorry, Capricorn that have you being like all business and all politics and all of this. And there are certain very charming aspects of the Capricorn nature and the sense of integrity that that you bring with you. But it's not all business. I think that the truth is that you're really much softer person than that. And I mean, before I get into whatever, well, talking about Aquarius, let me just show you. I've got my screen and screen. Ta-da! These are the very first screen and screen videos. One of my favorite things about Capricorn that says that it's not so Capricorn. Is that, Capricorn's supposed to be the goat, the climber, and you're gonna, step on everyone's head and all of that stuff. But it looks to me with Libra as the 10th place of Capricorn that actually your calling is beauty and a sense of aesthetics and a sense of balance in the world and wanting to do things with an integrity that includes aesthetic integrity. And that's not how Wall Street operates. So don't confuse yourself with that. And always remind yourself if you're feeling like you want to be the next Mark Zuckerberg, which I'm sure you haven't thought that today, that you're very much at home in a world where you can take action to make the world a more beautiful place. That's Libra on the 10th. And there's some important placements there, particularly Logos, which is about communicating in a way where you relate beautiful concepts, in a way where language matters. The words you choose and the way that you say things and the way you know that to the extent that you're a political person, you know that, when you have to bring someone on board, the way to bring them on board is with a kind of a gentle persuasion and the appeal of beauty. It will work for you. Will work for you. If you got to meet with people, meet in a beautiful place. Don't meet in an office or something like that. Meet in a garden or a restaurant with an outside patio and not a lot of sound. And the other thing going on in your 10th place, these are both very slow moving factors. I wasn't planning to talk about them. They're not, well, potentially specifically relevant to the spring. There's an angle actually is a point that vexed me for a long time called Maki Maki, the Birdman cult. The Birdman cult. See that painting behind me there? I'm not going to move the camera. That's off of the wall of the Lascaux Cave in France, near, I think, Bordeaux. A massive cave with hundreds and hundreds, cave system with hundreds and hundreds of paintings from 17,000 years ago. I mean, that's like one of my favorite things in all of existence. And those people did not depict humans, but they depicted a humanoid with a bird for his head. And there's also a humanoid with a bird for his head depicted in Rapa Nui, the Birdman cult. That's Makemake in your 10th. And then in ancient Egypt. And there was no postcards or email going back and forth between Rapa Nui in the middle of the Pacific Ocean and a cave in Bordeaux and in ancient Egypt. There was none. There were birdmen have visited us. What does that say? Well, it says that it's complicated to get into, and I get into it in the Libra reading in The Awakening, if you have access to The Awakening. It says that something that seems new actually has its roots in a very old tradition. And that is evocative of the revitalizing nature of Pluto and Capricorn. It wasn't all sheer destruction. During those years, I mean, you have certainly dismantled yourself and taken apart facets of your character and your personality, depending on where Capricorn lands in your natal chart as well. There'll be other stories told. I have Capricorn in the 7th in my natal chart, and this has been about a complete recreation, rethinking, dismantling, and reassembling of any concept of relationship. That's been Pluto and Capricorn. It's taken it apart and it's put it back together. And that, in the case of you as Capricorn, in the first place, taken you apart, and you've taken yourself apart and put yourself back together. And so now Pluto is moving on. And the nature of Aquarius is that it represents a kind of a selective, collective reality. It's not the mass world of the big crowd or the football game or the teeming unwashed masses of humanity. Aquarius focuses purpose. It focuses in-group, out-group. It focuses an organizational purpose. It is a distinct social pattern that it comes with. And with Pluto going through there, a couple of other factors, Aureus and Amicus, two centaurs are accompanying Pluto at the moment. This is a deep questioning and exploration of your values and your priorities. Your values and your priorities. And so if you are getting the message that now is the time to reprioritize, to think this through again, what is important to you? What matters to you? Pluto in Aquarius is aiding, abetting, and guiding that very thing. Now, the right now, at this moment, the overwhelming emphasis of the astrology is in Pisces. You can see that. And the orientation, by the way, is like this. At the bottom of your chart, Pisces third, Aries fourth. So it looks like this in my hand-drawn little art chart. Pisces third, Aries fourth. But here we get a little bit of a closer view, and this is approximately 1 week ago, maybe a little more, at the time of the Pisces new moon. Pisces new moon. And we can see there's a lot going on. There's things that are forming in Aries, very important things that are forming in Aries. They are about to be forming even more so in Aries, because Neptune reaches Aries and Saturn reaches Aries, and Chiron reaches its conjunction with Eris. Chiron conjunct Eris. Last exact, 1971-1972. Prior to that, in Aries, 15th century. Another argument that Capricorn is not the crispy critter that it's made out to be, or the possibility that the crispiness on the outside and the starched shirt type of approach to life and, like, you know, dressed well and understanding propriety and all that stuff, is that you have Pisces on the third place. And Pisces on the third place, it's a little like having Neptune on the, Libra on the 10th. It wants beauty. It wants softness. It wants softness of language. It wants, it's inherently seeking of a spiritual approach to the most immediate, mundane, basic existence. Pisces in the third place. Third place is local. You got to live in a beautiful community. You know, you're not like you can't like live in a tenement or an ugly apartment house. You know, you need not only your home to be beautiful. You need the place, the place where you live locally within a couple of miles to be aesthetically pleasing, beautiful, and a source of peace and comfort. And I'm glad there's still a few of those left in the world. But remember that about yourself. Now, over the last 14 years, Neptune has made its way across Pisces. And this is ending. It's about to go into a kind of a 1 year or so phase out. 9 months, depending on where you count from. You always leave a little bit of extra on the fringes of time, you know, like you go back a couple of months for a transit, go out a couple of months, or depending on the transit, a couple of years. But since 2011, Neptune has been in Pisces. This has made it difficult to be clear-headed, but it's also made it difficult to be dogmatic. It's made it difficult for you to say, this is what I know for absolute certain, unless you're in some very strong reaction to uncertainty, in which case, you know, you might like pump up the inner tube of certainty inside the flat tire of uncertainty. But the gentle approach has been one that has been accented by a kind of an insecurity. Now, we don't really know what Neptune transits were about until they're over. We're entering the end stage of this one. We're going to get a clue when Neptune goes into Pisces at the end of this month, on March 30th. We'll get a glimpse at that. We'll see that. And you'll find out something. Now, you also found out something in early 2023 when Saturn made its way into Pisces. Saturn here now approximately at 20-21 degrees and entered Pisces in early 2023, if I'm not mistaken. We're about 2 years in to this, and you usually get about 30 months total of Saturn in a sign, even though usually it's the beginning and the end are divided up by retrogrades, straddling a couple of places. But anyway, Saturn has brought tangibility and a sense of clarity that was distinctly missing when Neptune was there. Absolutely distinctly missing. And you kind of knew that it was missing because when Saturn showed up, it was like, wow, oh, there's like boundaries, there's containers, there's some definitions. Ooh, I must have been missing definitions. I'm supposed to be a Capricorn. How did I miss all those definitions? Well, a lot of Neptune can do that. So Saturn, your ruling planet, enters Pisces in 23 and look back over the last 2 years and see if there hasn't been some kind of a change, some kind of an improvement in this quality of complete uncertainty and also insecurity. Now, Saturn can also bring a form of insecurity, but compared to Neptune, it's at least the kind of insecurity where you like know you're feeling insecure, where insecurity is very difficult to deal with. When you don't know you're insecure, it's like, oh, that's what I was feeling. That's what I was worried, but I didn't know that I was worried. I did not know why I was worried. I didn't understand this whole like worried thing. Okay. And that is almost over. Almost over. And in fact, we are now going into this kind of a a transitional phase when many planets are going to be, make believe that's a one. See that? It says four, but just pretend that it's one. I could get out the whiteout fluid, but Venus and Mercury are going to be dancing over this line. In fact, they are already. We've got Mercury in Aries today, and we've got Venus in Aries retrograde now. It should have an RX. This was done with Venus direct. And then Neptune is going to go back and forth, and then Saturn is going to go back and forth. Well, this is happening in a very interesting area of your solar chart. What is interesting is that, you know, where, for example, I just read for Gemini, this whole thing is like projected out into the world. Let's find that chart. Let's just give you an idea of how this is fundamentally the same chart, only it's just set up for a different sign. Gemini is handling all of this Pisces, Aries in the most public, open, available area of their solar chart, whereas with Grandma Capricorn, it's way down at the bottom. It's deep inside. It is evocative of memories. It's evocative of places that you've been. It is very possible that you're in contact with relatives who you were out of contact with. It is possible that previous domestic partners are coming back into your life, not necessarily to stay in your life, but to for resolution of some kind, completion of some kind. And if anybody who shows up, just welcome them back. And you don't really know exactly why they're there, but to say that this astrology, which is going to have a way of shaking up the world, in which we are going to see the world shaking and vibrating in ways now that, you know, we're just seeing the early percussive shakes of with all that's been going on, in particularly in the United States government, for you is deep in your interior, deep in this place in consciousness that digital has really done a number on. And by digital, I mean the entire overwhelming, completely unstoppable, getting into every last thing of who we are, a digital environment, and now supplanting human thought. I've read this week convincingly. Well, I heard, and then the presenter read, and we're going to put this on every page, an account of the basically this artificial intelligence environment kind of taking over itself and acting as if it can defend itself, and then also acting in self-creative ways and knowingly communicating in language that is indecipherable to its creatives. They've created something that is so powerful they can't control it. Only the frightening thing is we're not talking about like a nuclear power plant, which is the kind of previous generations of things that was so powerful they couldn't control it. We're talking about something that emulates thoughts and thinks it makes decisions, running out of control and taking over. And by the way, I didn't get this connection until right now, but the property of thought is a third house property. It shows up other places, but the general mental environment that you inhabit, your state of mind, the language that you use, your ability to describe things, your communication style, and how you like to go shopping, are all described in the third house. If I had Pisces on the third house, I would love big open markets. I mean, I'm a Pisces, but I love big open markets. My favorite thing about living in France, one of the very top things, particularly my years in Paris, was that there were markets all over the place. You could completely survive shopping in open markets, except for toilet paper, tissues, whatever. No need to go to the supermarket. But this is also the mind. It's also the mind. And You've had Neptune here, and among the like spiritual assignments I would suggest for you as we go through this reckoning is contemplating the ways in which your thought patterns, your thought forms have been altered, changed, transformed, recreated under the influence of the digital environment. Now, it's not always so easy to pick out what this is about. But I would say go back to a state of yourself when you had a sense you knew where you were. I suspect that that in young women, there's something very special about like ages 17 to 20. There's a confidence that female humans have in that age that starts to go into eclipse in the 20s. And with guys, possibly there's a spell younger around the Saturn opposition around age 14. And then in the 20s, a lot of success to be had for young men, particularly in their later 20s, and a lot of confidence. And if you're a young man, you know, it's good. You should be firing in all your pistons by the time you're in your late 20s. So if you're a grown man, if you're not a young adult but a full adult, what was going on in your 20s? And how are you different today? How are you different now? What is different now? What exactly is different now? All right. So the story goes deeper in. The fourth house is a more emotional realm than it is a mental realm. But your mental is not very mental with Pisces there, but it's pretty smart Pisces. And Pisces can have good, very good minds. Einstein, for example. But then Aries in the fourth. I mean, that I did a lot of work in the awakening on Aries in the fourth. I like started going through chart files, like looking for the combination of Capricorn first, Aries fourth, and I forgot exactly who I came up with, but that's in the awakening. Because I thought this Aries 4 thing was so perplexing, the fourth being the house of one's inner security and one's relationship to one's father and one's physical space, the interior physical space that you occupy. And here we are. So the fourth is now being activated. The action is changing houses, and it's changing houses from a what's called a succedent house, which in your case happens to be, pardon me, a succedent house, which happens to be also a mutable sign. Succedent is the house-oriented term for mutable, the third of the group, angular, not fixed. I'll think of it. Angular something. Succedent. Here we go to an angular house. And an angular house is much more pronounced in its expression. That's how at least we read, and then we look for validation of that. So let's go from the theory to the reality. Many planets either gathering in this more pronounced house, the fourth, which represents interior space, physical security. And I think you're grounding in who you are, which is a very, very private thing. And there are resonance between that and your sense of where you are at home. So this is a very, very important thing for anything with Capricorn first, Aries fourth. Is you must actually feel at home. And be at home in the places where you are said to be at home, some address. And this would count for hotel rooms, and it would count for, it's kind of like you bring your home with you everywhere you go. Like if you stay in a hotel for 3 nights, that's where you live for 3 nights. And then if you travel on a bus for 24 hours. You're going to live on that bus for 24 hours. Then if you stay in another place for 2 weeks, you're living in that place for 2 weeks. It's not so much visiting. You live wherever you are, but where you live, where your address is located, what they write on your driver's license, that must be a place that actually feels like home, that you can call home. You can call home because it feels good. It feels like home. So this is gaining momentum and power. The crazy thing about this Neptune-Saturn conjunction in Aries is no living person has ever experienced it. No astrologer contemporaneously alive at the time has ever recorded the experiences of themselves or of society, of their clients. And further, all we really have is historical reference points. It's only happened four times since 1 BC. I just get a real kick out of that. On average, happens like every 500 years. And it's happening now in Aries. The conjunction happens about once every 35 years, but only four times in Aries. That's incredible, given how many 35s go into 2025. It just kind of skips Aries a lot. And now it's showing up in Aries in grand style. In grand style, meaning that the conjunction, just to give you a clue how it looks now, again, we're going to reorient the chart. The conjunction, you can see it forming with Neptune very late Pisces, Saturn moderately late Pisces, and they're both going to move very soon. Saturn March 30th, Neptune March 30th, followed by Saturn. Neptune moves so slowly, you always think, oh, Saturn moves faster. But Neptune's going to move into to Aries in a matter of weeks, followed by later in the spring, Saturn. This is a shift in a consciousness for everyone, but especially for you. And what's more exciting is that this conjunction happens, it actually happens at about half a degree of Aries, one time only. You can have these things make a series of three conjunctions because of the retrograde. That ain't happening. It's going to be conjunct on the Aries point one time. So you are in this moment of tremendous connection to your roots. Pretend this goes down. Let's turn it down. Pretend this goes down right there. See that? That's down. Northerly in the chart. I don't have a good explanation why that is, but it's down toward the ground, down toward the taproot, down toward the source of your origins, and down toward something about Father. Something about Father. Can't tell you exactly what, but something important about Father. Father, his legacy, his estate, what he taught you, and whether he taught you to feel safe, whether he taught you to feel your sense of safety and being and wholeness. Now, speaking of wholeness, there's a second major conjunction happening in Aries, and the second major conjunction has been brewing for years. It's been happening for a long. We've been working up to it for a long time. We might even see signs of working up to it. Let's turn this. Hello, hippies. Let's turn this sideways here like this and put this down. Ah, the screen is working really good. This alignment, Eris and Chiron, is happening for the first time since 71-72. So we're kind of back to this era, hippies. Hippie, there's one. That's actually an actual hippie. So we're kind of in hippie-ish times. For example, that's be a fun name for a newsletter. Chiron was in Aries for the Woodstock Festival. Saturn was not in Aries. Saturn was in... may have gone... don't quote me. But Chiron was definitely in Aries for the Woodstock Festival. It arrives like in 68. So by 69, the Woodstock Festival is a creature of Chiron and Aries. And by 71, 72, Saturn is there. And this was a watershed moment in history. And to the extent astrologers were conscious of the Uranus-Pluto conjunction, which I'm thinking, like, they may not have been thinking about it as the like, shocking thing that it was. They were certainly not thinking about Chiron and Eris. Why not? Well, they didn't know that either of those things existed. So they were having an experience of something that he did not have a clue existed. Nobody would have imagined a planet with a 51-year orbit between Saturn and Uranus. Nobody even theorized it that I know of. And the idea that there was a planet way out in the solar system with a 554-year orbit, taking 130 years of that orbit to go through Aries, not a thought about this. It was not a gleam in anyone's eye. But it was happening, and people felt it, and they responded. But what's different about now is it is happening when a big bunch of astrologers know that it's happening, and a good few of them are talking about it. I'm not sure what they're saying. If you come across anything interesting about even anything about what another astrologer is saying about the Chiron-Eris conjunction in Aries, please send it to me at efc@planetwaves.net. I'm very curious about how other astrologers are taking this. My take is that certain forces of the technological world have kind of come up from below for you and struck you close to home. Also, if we count Eris in Aries as being a factor that everyone lived through, there's really nobody watching this is going to be born without Eris in Aries. This describes a condition in your early childhood home where there may have been a fair amount of controversy and a fair amount of taking sides, and where there may have been subversive behavior by certain individuals who fomented conflict between people. If you grew up in a home where you noticed there was conflict in the home, the question is, who exactly was agitating that conflict? Somebody was. It wasn't just happening. Then we add Chiron. Well, Chiron is a healing principle. Chiron represents integrity as well as distinction, standing out. And of course, it is a factor associated with healing. But the kind of healing that we're talking about with Chiron in Aries making a conjunction to Eris in Aries is about claiming yourself back from some tribal reality, most likely the tribal reality of your early family, and you think carefully through whether you felt like you belonged in that tribe or not. Did you? Were there good moments and bad moments? Did you absolutely know these are not my people? These are a bunch of muggles. I've got nothing to do with them. Or did you somehow feel accepted and embraced and understood being the distinctive person that you are and that you were as a child? Because Capricorn kids definitely know how to stand up for themselves. And they know how to assert their individuality. The question is, what happens when you did assert your individuality? How did it go? How did people respond? So something is awakening from the distant past. Something is awakening. By distant past, I mean kind of childhood and the state that you arrived on the planet in. And to my eye, a Chiron conjunct Eris is the first clearly supportive of individuation factor in astrology going back a long way. And, you know, recognizing the way in which this whole concept of individuality, of inner being, of privacy have all been basically been blown inside out. Now we have Chiron coming to say, you will feel safe as you take the steps that you need to feel whole. And this is a beautiful reading of Aries on the fourth house, particularly given the planetary factors involved, is that it is an invitation that you have to experience your wholeness. And there are no doubt going to be things you want to change about your home and where you live and the way you live under this influence. It is classic astrology for some form of a relocation or internal renovation or... relocation or internal renovation of a place you're living, possibly some combination of. But I'm thinking, well, it could really be either one. You know, when the fourth house cusp is very active, people tend to go on the move. This line here, people tend to go on the move. Let's put it in blue. Well, let's put it in purple. Got enough orange in this chart. Boom. Oop. Boom. All right. So there's a lot of potential motion. But one of the ways motion could take place is coming back into yourself. Coming back into yourself. And claiming back the sense of inner truth and inner awareness that you may very well have surrendered, sacrificed, or had kind of washed out from under you here in the digital age and here in the immediately post Pluto in Capricorn age. I have no doubt that you're a tremendously tempered and matured person after the whole experience of Pluto in Capricorn. It would be impossible not to be. There's just no way that you could not have gone through some profound maturing process. And there are kind of two things about people. One of them is maturity, and the other one is confidence. And I would surmise, at least look in my reading of these hieroglyphics, that we only can do our best to understand, you have attained the maturity and some confidence, but all this motion in Aries is going to be about really feeling and settling into a kind of confidence of who you are, unlike any other time in your life. And have fun taking care of your home and really, 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 really making it your home. And that's not easy for everyone to do that. It takes me a long time to settle into places. Everything has to kind of find its place, and I've got to like claim every corner of it. And this is the time for you to do that with the home that you live in and the people that you live there with. All right, I think that is what I have to say to you and for you on this fine afternoon here, late winter afternoon, chilly late winter afternoon here in the Hudson Valley of Upper State New York. Thank you for joining me. I will see you around at some other point in the wheel. By the time I got to the Capricorn reading for the awakening, I was kind of on fire. By the time I got to Capricorn, Aquarius, and then Pisces, I was cooking with gas. And so that is a reading worth checking out. It's a printable, market-upable reading. I give these things on when I'm doing writing on PDF so that you can, print them and scribble on them and totally completely claim it and make it your own, which is one of the reasons why I use these, personally annotated charts, is to have something that's like actually one of a kind that I made for you. This chart, by the way, will be on your delivery page. Any questions, please reach out to me. Once again, thank you. Please send my love to your cats and dogs and other critters in your home. Lots of love, and bye.